Hello and welcome to Fueling Around with me, Jason Plato, and the wind beneath my wings. Hey, this gets better every week. It's Dave Vitti.
Hello there.
Oh, man, that's sick. The wind beneath my wings, I like that. Fueling Around is powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance. So then, Dave, what an intro for you.
Well,
amazing.
You know, I mean, wind beneath... It's quite a grand intro, isn't it? I mean, I was running out of things to call myself. But anyway, I thought that would do.
I love it. I think it's perfect.
It's kind of in keeping and fitting with the level of guests that we're talking about today as well. I mean, because we're not messing around. We're not playing games on this series.
We are not playing games. Our guest today... Well, just reading this, I mean, I feel shattered. Not only is he a highly decorated athlete who's represented Great Britain at both the Olympics and the Commonwealth Games, but now he's one of these absolute fruitcakes which runs ultramarathon thingies, you know, just for the sheer hell of it. And also, when he's not involved in that kind of madness, he's a TV presenter who's done just about everything on the box. Yeah. And also, he's a proud father to his young son, Teddy. It is, of course, the one and only Ewan Thomas. Hello, mate.
Hello, guys. All good. Lovely to speak to you both.
Well, thank you very much for being here, sir.
Well, in fact, the last time we hooked up, I think it was in a couple of years ago in what train station? In Waterloo train station. We bumped into each other, didn't we?
I do remember. It was Waterloo. And the time before that, Jason, we were absolutely off it at the sports personality propping up the bar at about three in the morning.
I do remember that as well. That was. Yeah. I kind of remember it.
So it was quite nice to see you sober at Waterloo.
And vice versa.
Good.
that sounds like a Jason Plato night, actually, propping up the bar at the Sports Personality of the Year Awards.
Well, do you know what? It's a perfect name for it, because Ewan's got some personality. I've got a tad, and we were there.
Yeah, and we're relatively sporty-ish still.
Yeah.
Well, you are. How do you keep going?
Oh, I think it's in my genes, because I don't do any of that gym stuff, although arguably I should do. And in fact, ironically, now as I'm... You know, I've just turned 54. I'm probably going to have to start doing some stuff, aren't I? But, mate, don't talk to me about doing stuff and keeping fit. I mean, what on earth are you doing them ultramarathons for? What on earth has possessed you to do that?
Well, I made a stupid bet with a mate of mine, a girl called Susie Chan, who does these ultramarathons. And I said, I've done London Marathon a number of times. I said, yeah, it's pretty bad, but how hard can an ultra be? And she said, well, an ultra is anything past marathon distance. So a 50-mile run would be pretty good. But if you want to be respected as a double hard you-know-what, why don't you go straight and do a 100-miler? And I went, yeah, all right then. And I stupidly agreed to it, signed up to it, and it was the most horrific thing I have ever done. 100 miles non-stop along the South Downs Way. It took me the best part of 30 hours. And I reckon it took me probably 2 months before I was walking properly again. It's that bad.
Really?
You were training for that, Ewan, I think, when we last spoke, and I just couldn't believe the undertaking, because for me, I've done a half marathon once. I've done the Great North Run, right? And the one thing that taught me was the fact that I never, ever wanted to do an actual marathon, because the idea of doing that 13 miles again was just baffling. But for you to do 100 miles, and it's not even a flat 100 miles, is it? Over the South Downs, you've got some proper hills.
Yeah, I think it was a third of the height of Everest. It was horrific. But the worst bit is the organisers said to me when I entered, they said, well, you're just a sprinter, aren't you? You know, you're taking this seriously. I said, well, of course I'm taking it seriously. And they said, well, you need to prove yourself. So I can't believe it. They made me do a 50-mile qualifying race to allow me to take part in the 100. So for me to even prove myself, I had to then do a 50-miler, which, again, was horrific. And I finished that in just under 11 hours. And I thought, there's no way I could double that. There's no way I could turn around and go back again. So I went into the 100-miler, you know, pretty mentally fatigued and destroyed, because the 50-miler had put doubts into my mind. Rather than made me confident, oh, I could do it, it was quite the opposite. So, yeah, the 100-miler was tough, but I had a really good reason to do it. And I think in life, whatever you do, if you're going to set yourself a challenge, if you have a reason to complete that and a reason and the will never to quit, then that will get you to the finish line. And that's what I did. I did it for my boy, really, because my boy was born very ill with something called strep B, and lots of people have never heard of it. So I actually did it, and I had written across my arm for those less fortunate, because I just did it for all those families who you weren't as lucky as me to bring their boy home after 10 days in intensive care. You know, lots of people lose their lives to this. So that was my reason to finish. And yeah, it got me to the finish line. Limping and in pain, but I got there.
Good on you, mate. I mean, I cannot even begin to imagine how to do 100 miles on foot.
You could do it. Honestly, you could both do it. I promise you, if you set your mind to it, I'm sure, you know, it wasn't a physical thing for me, because I get to normally about mile 15. I'm a bit like you, Dave. Like, a half marathon is okay, but anything further, I'm just not built for it. And people assume if you're a runner, you're a runner. You must be able to run anything, but I'm not. I'm all about getting from A to B quickly. I'm all fast twitch fibers. I'm like 96 kilograms. I'm not built for running up and down mountains. And you know, I got to about mile 15 and my body was pretty much shutting down. And from then it was purely just mind over matter, really. And I just wouldn't let myself stop.
I remember my body just about shutting down. And it was on the Monday after the Great North Run where I did it with you and a few others, Ewan. I mean, when I say did it with you, I wasn't in any way running with you. You started, I started, we met each other in the canteen at the finishing line. I mean, it was the same year as you, right? Yeah, I wasn't on...
Dave, before you tell your story, let's tell the truth. The reason your body was shutting down on the Monday morning is we went absolutely out on the bladder on the Sunday night straight after the race. No recovery, no dinner. We went on a massive pub crawl. I think that's why we were both hurting the next day.
You're not wrong. This is what I was getting to. I have actually
weren't getting to that. You wanted to avoid that.
No. This is why I don't think I've ever felt quite so ill as I did at Newcastle train station on the Monday trying to get a train back to London, because as Ewan says, we had no recovery. We went straight to the hotel bar and we just got on it. I actually fell over getting back into the hotel after I left you. And I woke up in the morning, I had a black eye and all grazes down my face.
Too many. You know what that is, Dave? I mean, I suffer from this. I've got way too many, just like you and Ewan, too many fast... What was it? Fast
twitch. Yeah.
We're too twitchy.
That's it. I think we should talk cars, really, shouldn't we? Because the thing is, as well as being an incredible athlete and a thoroughly nice gentleman, Ewan, you're a bit of a petrol head, aren't you? I mean, and when I say that, that's not an understatement.
No, honestly, I don't think we'd have long enough if we went through all the cars I've had. I'm massively into cars, motorbikes, anything with an engine that moves fast. You know, I just love it. And I was thinking back before I spoke to you today, I was thinking about my first ever car. And that's not a bad little story, I think, for that, because it came around quite quickly, because it started when I started athletics, which, quite frankly, happened in a whirlwind of a summer. So I went from never, ever trying the 400 metres to 3 weeks later in Seoul at the World Junior Championships competing, where I'd never done a day's training. I didn't have a coach. I certainly didn't belong to an athletics club, and I was wearing borrowed running shoes.
And when so how did that come around then? Rewind a bit. How did it go from nothing to being at Seoul?
Well, basically, I changed school for my A-levels because my parents moved abroad, and in the summer term, I knew I was good at running, but previously I'd been one of those kind of sport billy kids who didn't concentrate on athletics because I didn't really even like it, because I did BMX racing. I went to a couple of world championships from the age of 9 doing that. So I always knew I was very competitive, but I was one of those annoying kids who played county, you know, football, rugby, cross country, you know, any sport I did, I was pretty good at it. And athletics came really late to me, but it was at the new school. I tried to sort of fit in and, if you want, show off on sports day. So I asked if I could do 5 different events. Mm-hmm. And in a nutshell, I won all 5 events and I broke all the school records. And a teacher came over to me after the 400 metres, of which I won by the biggest margin. And he clipped me around the head. He said, "What are you doing, boy? I've never seen anything like it. That's raw talent." And I went, "Oh, whatever, sir." And then the following weekend, without telling me, he'd entered me into the county championships. I won that. And then I got a phone call literally after the English school saying, "You've run really quick. Do you want to go to the World Juniors?" I went, "What's the World Juniors?" And I didn't know anything about it. And I came back from that and I then went to university, and it was almost like, this is going to sound more glamorous than it is, but it was almost like a bidding war from different athletics clubs to sign me up, because they were like, "Who is this like 17-year-old kid? Never heard of him before. He's got some talent." So Belgrave Harriers offered me a Ford Fiesta if I joined their club.
Is that
right?
Like,
yeah. So I was like at uni, just about to start uni. I didn't have a car. So obviously athletics is amateur, but they go, "We'll buy you a brand new Ford Fiesta." I was like, "Oh, brilliant." And then another club, Newham Beagles, heard about this. They said, what they offered you? I went, "A Fiesta." They said, "We'll do your Ford Escort 1.6 GL. I went, "I'll have it."
Is that right?
Yeah. So my first car was a white Ford Escort 1.6 GL given to me by my athletics club for joining them. So, yeah, it was brilliant.
Oh, my God. I never knew this sort of stuff went on. That's a crazy story. Yeah. Brilliant story.
And then I think about a year after that, this is long before lottery funding, I was sort of developing nicely as an athlete, running quicker. And then there was the Ron Pickering Memorial Fund. And they gave me a grant. I think it was £3,000. They gave me a grant towards my training. Yeah. So, of course, I straight away went out and I bought a 205 1.9 GTI. So at the end of my first year at uni, I had this bright red 1.9 GTI hot hatch, which was the... I loved it. Yeah. I spent all my athletics money on that. But yeah.
Come on, be honest. How many times did you go off on it? Because I had one and I spun mine twice.
Oh, all the time. All the time. I was always stopped by the police in it as well. Like, is it stolen? I was like, no. It's paid for by someone else's money.
Ron Pickering.
Yeah.
We've talked about these before, haven't we, Jason? I think we were talking to Tom Kerridge about the Peugeot 205 GTI, because they're one of those cars that you never see on the road anymore, which I can only assume is because most of them got bent.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, they were wild. Brilliant cars, but edgy, and you could get yourself into all manner of trouble.
Yeah, which is why you just don't see them now. And actually, for me, when you see stuff like that, it's far more head-turning than something a lot more exotic. Do you know what I mean? Like, for example, if a Lambo or Ferrari or something goes past me on the high street, yes, I have a look because I'm interested and you'll hear it coming. But if you see something like that, like an old GTI or even an original XR2 or something, it's a proper wow moment, I think, for gentlemen of our age, if you like.
Yeah, because there's more Lambos on the road than those things.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
They're worth quite a lot of money. I think they're worth probably about 60 grand now if you saw a good example of one. Because, as you said, then they're not out there. And it kind of like, it does for us, we look at them and it reminds us of our youth. In fact, I recently borrowed a car and it was the nearest thing to it. I had a Type R, but it was a limited edition one. It was there was only 20, came to the UK, and it was stripped bare, so it had no air conditioning, no stereo, no sat navs. It was pretty very basic.
Is this the yellow one?
Yeah, it was quite
001.
Yeah, 001, the first one. And actually, it was really good fun. It was a manual box, obviously, and it kind of reminded me a little bit of the 205, where, you know, just rev the hell out of it and go. And, you know, none of these fancy traction control or anything like that. Just give it some. And, yeah, I loved it.
So where'd you go then after the 205 GTI? Because, I mean, that's quite a statement at that age, isn't it? And that sort of time of your life.
Yeah, it is. I think I then got sponsored by a local Ford garage, and the first car they got me, and I was all excited until I got it, and it looked all right, but it was horrific. It was a Ford Probe. Do you remember the Probe?
It's a shocker.
Yeah, it was a really bad car.
That was a really iffy period, wasn't it, I think, for Ford? Just that whole, what was that, late 90s, sort of 97, 98,
not early, 99? Early 90s. It was early. It must have been mid-90s. 96, I think it was.
Okay.
About 96, because there was, I got that.
There was things like the Probe and there was the Cougar, but not the Cougar that they've got now. Like the
only thing I liked about it was the pop-up lights. And I thought, it must be quite sporty. And I got in it. It had nothing about, no guts. No, it was so slow. But the thing is, when it's a free car and you're being sponsored, you have to have I had to have my name down the side of it as well. So it wasn't like I could subtly put a beanie hat on and drive around. It was massive. It was a Ewan Thomas sponsored by Tall Garages and all along the side. And everywhere I went, I was like, please don't.
Mate, it could have been worse.
Yeah.
You could have had a PT Cruiser.
Oh, dear.
I'd love to meet someone. In fact, I want to meet someone that's bought one and just try and understand what was going on, because that's obviously the ugliest car's ever been made.
No, hang on. If you're talking ugly, you've got that Fiat Multistrada or whatever, or something.
The three seats in the front.
No, it's like boxy, isn't it? It's really boxy. Yeah.
And hasn't it got lights on the roof as well?
It's ugly.
Horrible, horrible things. I agree with you, and I think that's possibly one of the biggest.
What, even worse than the PT Cruiser?
You're definitely worse. It is horrific.
So we're after the Cougar.
The Probe.
Probe. And then I got a Cabriolet Escort, so it was a hairdresser's car. Then I got... This is all from the Ford garage. Then I actually got one that was decent at the time. It was the ST24, the Mondeo.
That was all right. Yeah.
That was all right. And then I started to do all right for myself, after the 96 Olympics. And in 97, off where they just came out, I ended up jumping the waiting queue and I bought the Lotus Elise. And I loved it. Titanium grey with red leather interior, and that was fun. That was like a little go-kart. So that was my first brand new good car that I bought. Yeah.
Wow. great on a track. Did he ever do track days on it?
I didn't. No, I didn't in that one. No, but I enjoyed it. It was a really good fun car just to chuck around, and yeah, it was good. I mean, very underpowered. I look back now, you know, it must have been maybe a 1.6 or a 1.8. It wasn't a big engine, but it felt quick.
I remember having one of those on loan for the weekend from a PR company that I knew, and I thought, right, I need to go somewhere fun. So I thought, right, we'll go for me and my missus go for a weekend up to the Peak District. So I thought, great roads up there, we'll do that. So anyway, so I pick up this car at lunchtime on the Friday, and I go and pick my missus up from work, and she's got her bag packed and everything away for the weekend. She's got no idea how small this thing is, right? And her bag won't go in the boot. So we basically spent about 3 hours in the rain going up the M1 to the Peak District, and she's there in this hard kind of bucket seat with this massive bag on top of her lap. Because nothing will go in the boot. And also, she's got the engine right behind her. Because they were really loud, weren't they? They were really, really noisy. And I just looked over, and she was so not enjoying the car as much as I was.
Yeah, and hot inside. Really
it got hot, but it used to leak as well. I'd, if I left it outside overnight, in the morning there'd be a puddle. And
because it had that funny little stretchy roofy thing.
They had about 600 buttons to get the roof on, like these clip, you know, as in clip on. And they reckon you could do it in like 2 minutes or something. What a load of rubbish. It used to take me about 20 minutes to get that on.
Went round corners well, though, eh?
It did. It did. And at the time, it looked good. It was a little bit ahead of its time. I thought it looked really good. It was new. It was funky. I liked it. So, yeah, I'm trying to think what else. Honestly, I've had so many. What came after that? I think after that, I've probably missed a few cars out, but then I went to I got the Subaru STI, the pink the badge
import.
One.
Yeah,
the import. And that was quick. That was good.
What, an Impreza?
STI. Yeah, the Impreza. And also, you can be a very average driver like me, and that car would look after you. You know, four-wheel drive, you know, it was just mega. You could chuck it around the corners. And all my mates thought, oh, you're a really good driver. Like, he sticks to the road. And it wasn't me. It was the car. It was good.
Wow. So Subaru Impreza STI. What comes next?
What comes next is I went in to get that serviced. And in the garage, they had a TVR Cerberus. Yeah,
oh
Cerberus.
Oh, my God, really? Did you go for one of them?
Yeah, you know, honestly, instead of getting that service, I swapped it. And honestly, I loved it. I loved it. It was good. But as soon as my ex-girlfriend's boss at the time said, oh, that would be breaking down all the time. And it hadn't. And as soon as he said it, he put the kiss of death on it. Everyone started going wrong with that car.
Quick, though, weren't they?
Really it was quick. It was quick. And then from there, I got the Evo, the Tommy Mackinnon limited edition, Evo 6, I think it was.
Lancer,
yeah.
Sensible runaround, Ewan.
And that, it was awesome.
Yeah. Was that the FQ400 they called it?
It may have even been before. I'm trying to think. I think it was a 6.
Was it?
So, yeah. But once again, this was quite a limited edition one. So this had the bigger air scoop and all sorts of bits and pieces. It was silver with like these sort of brownie gold alloy wheels. And it was so nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, honestly, I loved that. And once again, another car which you could look like you were the absolute Don driving it around. And I lived in Derbyshire at the time when I had that. So all the lovely country lanes. I used to train at Loughborough at the time. So I used to drive into training that. And I absolutely loved it. Loved it. And had this little button on this inside, so I think it used to blow water onto the turbo to keep it cool or something.
I had water injection.
That's it. Yeah,
Water into the intercooler.
What, that you would then control manually?
Yeah, inside.
Yourself.
Yeah, manually by the gear stick. You just said. If I felt like I'd been smashing it a little bit, I just thought I might be doing something good for the engine, so I just kept pressing this button. But yeah, little gadgets. I loved it. I loved that car. And then I let myself down after that because I really enjoyed that car. I should have kept it. And then I went and got a Jaguar XKR and all my mates absolutely rinsed me. They said, this is an old man's car. Like, literally, why you're too young for this? Because I was probably like 30 or something. And it was a nice car, but it was a little bit too elegant for me. Yeah. It was a bit too refined.
Yeah. See, but we have this difference of opinion, don't we, Jason, on those Jags? Because you're not a fan at all. But you see, I'm with you, Ewan. I quite like them, but they've got to be properly pimped up. They've got to be, you know, with all the kind of the black spec on there and all that kind of stuff. But you do always get accused of driving an old man's car.
I did. I went to training in it and everyone literally ridiculed me. They were like, yeah, I get it. It's got big wheels. It looks quite nice. But, you know, is it your dad's car? You know, and I was like, ah. And I took a big hit on that. And that's one thing we haven't touched upon yet. But I mean, I love cars, but they don't half lose your money. And I think I bought that for something. I make these numbers up, but I bought it for something like 28. And I got absolutely rinsed for having it. And I sold it about a month later for like 21. And it was just like, oh.
That'll learn you.
It didn't though, Jase, because I then went back to TVR because I just thought, right, if I'm too old for that, I'm going to go and get myself a Tuscan. So I went and got a TVR Tuscan, and that was good. And that didn't let me down. Mechanically, that one was pretty sound.
No, well, that's the original proper car, isn't it, the Tuscan?
That was good. I did enjoy that car. Kept that one for a few years.
Well, mate, fair play. You've certainly had an interesting taste in cars. It's great tasting cars, actually.
We're not even halfway through.
I was going to say.
I've missed a load out.
In terms of you having a type, Ewan, I mean, they're very different cars, but they're all a bit silly, aren't they? And I mean that with the greatest respect.
No, they are. I mean, I'll miss a few out, but, you know, from there, we've gone on to things like, for my 40th, I bought myself an R8. I mean, that wasn't silly. That was a great motor. And actually, that did me really well. So I bought that from a dealer, and I knocked them down quite a lot. So one thing my dad always taught me, really, never go for a brand new car. Just get one that's a year or two old. And that's what I did with the R8. It had taken a massive hit already. So I got it secondhand from an Audi dealership for 50 grand, and I kept it just over a year. And I sold it to a dealer for 50 grand. So it was a free car. Yeah. In fact, I blew up the diff went on it. And I remember it was under warranty still. And Audi were like, oh, that would have been a heavy bill. And I was like, how heavy? They were talking thousands. And I kind of pooped it a little bit after that. So I got it repaired and ended up selling it because I thought it's a really nice car. But once it's out of warranty, you know, things start to go wrong. It's expensive. Yeah. So
great motors.
That was another car that I wish I'd kept that. That was nice black, big wheels on it. And yeah, that was a good car. That was a good car. But then I think I've gone a bit more silly since then. As I said, I've missed a load out, but I've gone...
I was going to say, just then I thought you were getting into really, like, sexy, good territory. Which way are we going to go now?
Well, no, we've it's gone better. Better in terms of not for my bank balance, but better car. So as I said, I've missed out a load. But then for about 4 years ago, I've always wanted a Lambo. So I went to get... another car. What was I going to get? That's it. I ordered an RS6 and I thought, right, sensible car.
Proper car.
Absolute beast of a car. And I got home and I said to my missus, I was like, I just ordered this car and I showed her it. She goes, is that like a sports car? Is it good? And it made me think, they're so understated. I just thought, I'm spending 100 grand on a car and I don't really, really want it.
Yeah.
She goes, well, why don't you spend a bit more and get something you really want? And I was shocked that she said that, but I was all right then. So I went and got...
I tell you what, I bet you didn't need asking twice, did you?
Yeah, no, exactly. So I got the Huracan when it... Well, not when it first came out. I got a second-hand Lambo Huracan, and it was so nice. One chap had it before me, full PPF, all the top spec on it, black blooming exhaust pipes, and it was just really nice. But once again, you lose money on a car like that. So I had that for a year or so and then got rid of that. Actually, I got rid of that when my son came along, and I wish I hadn't, because he's old enough now to kind of like really like cars and point things out. So I think I am actually looking again to get another stupid car. But I've had a couple of silly ones since then. So I got rid of that, and then I went, and this was one of the worst cars I've ever owned. I got the G-Wagon, but I got the Brabus edition, so 700 brake horsepower. Yeah. Looked fantastic, sounded amazing. Yeah. Absolute load of, it was like driving a box.
Yeah.
I think the new ones are apparently much better, but
I think you're right. But they're still like lorries, aren't they? I've never got them. They look great, but they're disappointing to the driver.
Yeah, it sounded wicked, and it had these massive wheels. I don't even know, 22 inch or maybe even bigger, huge wheels, and it really did look the part. I thought it's big, it's safe. My boy's in the baby seat in the back, and you know I felt good about that. But I only kept that for 4 months, and I pleaded with the dealer to take it back off me. I phoned him. I said, please, because I got it from a place called Redline up near Harrogate up north. And he goes, oh, you'll like the drive home. Honestly, by the time I got home, I'd regretted buying it. It was literally within 4 hours, I was like, nah, it's not for me. So I only kept that one for 4 months.
They're too like, you know, Land Rover Defenders. That, you know, that's been unkind. But you've driven it. It's not a nice... It's not very car-like, is it?
No, exactly. It was like a Defender. I think, you know, I was fighting the steering wheel all the way. You go over a manhole cover or a little drain or a pothole and you're fighting the car all the time. But yeah, it looked good. It looked good. So yeah, got rid of that. Where did I go from that? Oh, I tell you, one of the nicest cars I've had. So I got the Bentley Continental GT, but I got the Onyx edition. So there's a company up north And it's a bit of a footballer's car, if I'm honest with you, but they send the car to Portugal. They put on a big flared bonnet, massive wheel arches, 22-inch wheels. It was gorgeous. Carbon fibre everywhere on it. And that was probably the nicest car that I reckon out of all of them I probably owned. Loved that one. But that was a bad one. So I lost 15 grand on that car in about 5 months.
It's a lot of dough, isn't it?
And that hurt me.
Mm.
In fact, I've left a car out, which I still own. The only car I've kept for a number of years. So I've got a C63 AMG, but the old V8 6.3 one.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's going nowhere. So that's my everyday car, if you like. So, love that.
That's a great bit, kid.
They are fantastic. I absolutely love them. And it's such a crying shame. And you understand why, obviously, because the world's changed. But it's such a shame that that big lump of an engine isn't in those AMG cars anymore.
Yeah. I love it. And, you know, I've driven the new ones and they're quick and they're all right, but they don't sound. I mean, my car annoys my neck. Every time I start it on a cold start in the morning, I know the curtain twitchers in the house opposite are absolutely fuming at me. I got up the other day, I had to go out at 6:30 in the morning and I love it. I don't care. I start it up and I know everyone's thinking there's a thunderstorm outside. It's just like so loud because obviously I've had things done to it. So it's been remapped and decatted and all this stuff. So it honestly sounds like it's an animal. I love it. Yeah.
And you say that's going nowhere.
I don't think so, Dave, because I think with those... I mean, I'm hoping they're only going to go one way in value if I keep it for long enough, because the world is going to go electric and everything's changing. And I think at some point people are going to really miss those kind of big gas guzzlers.
Without a doubt. I mean, the only thing I've got everything crossed for, whilst I'm an advocate of electric because it's got to go that way, I'm hoping that synthetic fuels might come along soon. And then we can all get back to driving Larry stuff again.
Yeah.
Do you think that's a genuine possibility?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I do. I mean, I don't know. I don't know the timescale going on, but I do think it is a possibility.
Mm.
And I think one of the great reasons for it is the infrastructure's there, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, if we have a synthetic gasoline, then it can go in the petrol stations, which there's millions of the things around.
Absolutely.
So, fingers crossed. Fingers crossed that can happen.
I agree with you, Ewan, in terms of those sort of cars, those big kind of lumps, is that I think theoretically they must go up in value.
Yeah. Well, like we talked about the 205 earlier, these sort of cult cars, if you like, or, Lancia Integrale, there's been some really good cars of yesteryear, which you see them now and they are worth a lot of money. So I'm hoping... give it another 10 years or so. And it's not worth anything for me to sell, if I'm honest with you. I've spent probably more on that car doing stuff to it than what it's worth at the moment. So I didn't think it'd be a shame. I'll probably store it somewhere and just take it off the road and keep hold of it, I think, because I just love it.
I think as much as anything else, I think that when people revisit cars like that in 10 or 15 years' time, I think even just the noise alone is going to be such a special thing because, as I say, if we fast forward into the motoring future, cars are going to be electric for the most part and they're going to be silent for the most part. Yeah. And then to actually revisit in somebody's garage like yours, Ewan, and you kind of go, oh, wow, they don't make cars like this anymore,
absolutely,
do they? And when you start it up, that, for anybody who's into cars like we are, is going to be a really, really special thing and actually worth going and visiting the car just for the noise alone.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I personally don't think you can beat, that sound of that V8 and, with my Lambo, the V10 and the only itch I've yet to scratch is a V12. And Jason, you'll probably tell me stay well clear of it, but I'm 50 in 3 years' time and I keep saying I want to get another silly car and something tells me I have to own an Aventador at one time in my life. But then everyone says to me, it's an absolute dog. They're too big. You can't park them. It's uncomfortable. You get your back put out every time you change gear. But, I don't know. There's something about that sound of the V12, which it does it for me.
I mean, a lot of people are right in what they say about them, but they are amazing. But my favourite noise is the V10. I think that's the nicest sounding engine by a long shot.
I've also not scratched it. I know you're a big fan of them, Porsche. I've not had a 911 and I'm surprised because that's a car that I absolutely love. Like, my mate's got the GT3. I've been in a GT3 RS, which once again is pretty uncomfortable for the roads. But there's something about those cars which I just think, wow, I'll never have the the ability to outdrive that car. But yeah, they're amazing. And you know, I think at some point I'll probably go down the route of getting a 911. In fact,
I would say go down that route before you go down the Aventador.
Really?
Without a doubt, yeah.
I very nearly bought a Turbo S a few years ago. And if I'm honest, it scared me. Honestly, the car was in a straight line. It was like a motorbike. I've never driven anything like it. It was so quick, back-breakingly quick.
That's my all-time favourite car. I've been lucky enough to have half a dozen of the things now, and it's just, for me, it's the best car ever. Because you're right, they're rocket ships, but actually very calm and collected, and if you want to, you know, poot around town in it, you can. And also, they don't look extreme. Because it's a Porsche, isn't it?
I think it's quite telling the fact that, Jason, you have always been such an advocate for Porsches. And bearing in mind, obviously, you know, being a professional driver of many, many years. And then we did a live version of Fueling Around a few weeks ago. And Tim Harvey, likewise, when asked in terms of, you know, what is the one car? Because these are people, obviously, who've had a lot of cars during their time. Yeah. Some they've bought, some they've actually had on loan, et cetera, et cetera. And I thought it was very telling that both of you just said, Porsche 911 all day long.
Yeah, there's just something about the way that you know, the steering on a Porsche is like no other car. You feel just the way it communicates what's going on.
And is that because of the positioning of the engine? Is that
that's got a certain part to it. But just that, you know, I think because, you know, every year a 911 is a 911 and they just refine it and tickle it and make it better and keep improving it. It's a work of art now. I mean, they are extraordinary. If you go back 10 years and drive one, a comparable turbo from 10 years ago,
yeah,
I mean they're light years better than they were, but it's still got that feel. Yeah, they're great bits of kit. Great bits of kit. Have you driven the electric, the Taycan?
I was going to ask you about that because I'm very close to putting an order in for the Cross Turismo, the bigger one, because I think the laws have changed, haven't they, through a company in terms of it's quite financially a good way to go.
Absolutely.
I think that 0% year one, 1% tax, then 2%. So all of a sudden, you know, to do it through the company, it's looking like a sensible, cheap way of motoring. So, yeah. I'm looking one at the moment. I mean, I've been in one. Once again, I thought it was lightning fast. I've spoken to other Porsche owners who say, it doesn't feel like a Porsche though, but it's not going to, it's electric. But I think that might be my next car actually.
Great car. Really good car.
Didn't you say it's the fastest thing you've ever driven, Jason?
Accelerating-wise, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's insane. I mean, I'm convinced, and it's a test which an idea I've put to the fifth gear crew and said, look, what we need to do is 0 to 60, or maybe even 0 to 100 on the Turbo S Taycan, and we'll do it against an F1 car. I'm convinced the road-going Porsche would win.
Do you think?
Really?
Honest to God, they are insanely quick. Fastest car I've ever been, accelerating car.
You should do that. That'd be a hell of a test.
It'd be a great
it?
Test. It'd be an
incredible test. And I tell you what, Porsche should love you for it as well, wouldn't they?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Definitely have a driving one.
Yeah, I'm actually going tomorrow.
That would be the one I would do, is the Cross Turismo. It's a great bit of kit.
You would go for the Cross Turismo,
they're
a bit rarer as well, aren't they? They've only just come out, obviously, so you don't see as many around. So, and I think, you know, chuck the kid in the back. You know, I can get away with saying it's a family car as well. So yeah,
it's like an estate car. I mean, they're phenomenal thing. So here's a great question for you, because we've got a few standard set questions. Out of all of your eclectic mix of cars, if you had to pick only one and stick with it evermore, assuming it didn't go, it won't go wrong because we'll have it fixed. Only one for life. What would it be?
The Probe.
Yeah. I'd like to say the Lambo, but obviously no, because it's not an everyday car. So honestly,
it could be anything. It could be. It doesn't need to be everyday. It's the car you most would like to live with for the rest.
But that is the last car you ever drive. It's that forevermore.
I think actually, do you know what? I've missed a car out, which will surprise you, but I loved. I had one of those Mini Cooper Works, the supercharged one. Now that put a smile on my... It would have to be a car that makes me smile every time I get out of it. So I'd probably have to say the Lambo, I think. Although I love my C63, I really do. But in terms of getting out of it, and it's been a bit of a thrill, I'll say the Lambo.
Ewan's gone for the Lambo. We like his choice.
Surprised, you know, but I can see what you're doing there. Because
what do you think I'd go for? Do you think I would have gone for like the Merc?
I thought you were going to go.
I thought you were going to go C63.
Yeah. Well, actually, do you know what? I'm easily led, but I think you're probably right. If I'm honest about it, the longevity, I've had that car for like 6 years, and I normally keep cars for a year, so it must tell me something. So yeah, I'll go for the C63.
Oh,
I actually think I will go for the C63 because it's got drama. Yeah. It sounds good, it's comfortable. Yeah.
It's got a bit of everything, hasn't it?
Yeah.
We normally ask people about their two car fantasy garage, and this is a two car fantasy garage based on no upper price limit. Now the thing is that normally when we ask this, people start thinking about all these fantastical motors that they would never ordinarily own. But the funny thing is, though, that you've bloody owned all these cars.
I haven't owned them all. Of course I haven't.
Is there anything left that you haven't already been down in terms of,
oh,
you know,
of course,
what...
come on Dave, you've got all sorts of, I've never owned a Bugatti or some proper super hypercar. Okay. I do like the Huracan STO, the new, yeah, that looks a bit of kit to me. Or, you know, maybe the Perf. I don't know my ultimate two car garage. I don't know what I'd go for.
Because also, bearing in mind, you can use this two-car garage to, if you like, cover all the ground that you need as a husband, father, etc., etc. So, you know, do you go for example, a Range Rover and then something really daft, or do you go for an RS6 and a 911? I don't know.
Yeah, I think RS6 is something I would go for, a pimped up the new RS6. I think that I could get away with saying that's my dad car.
Yeah.
And then I'd have something stupid as well. So, yeah. I just because they're Larry, I'll go the SVJ, the Aventador. I think I'd get an Aventador as well. And Jason, you'll probably kill me for it, and I'd probably regret it.
No, two great motors. Yeah. I'll tell you what's interesting, Dave. This is Series 3 now, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And nobody... In that question, nobody's gone for a Bugatti. Isn't that interesting?
It is interesting, actually, yeah. And I'd
not
never
that
thought...
I would. It wouldn't be in my garage.
No, it wouldn't be in mine either, because I just think that I just wouldn't want to spend that kind of obscene money on that. Do you know what I mean?
I know.
There's so many other things that I'd have before that.
And also, yeah, you've got to put petrol in it. It cost me not 90 quid to fill up the Merc the other day with the prices of petrol. You've got a Bugatti, you're going to be spending like 300 quid a day.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I am assuming, though, if this is your ultimate garage, money's no object, so I can afford the petrol anyway, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I'm thinking that if there's no limit on what you buy, and then forget about the petrol as well. So, yeah, you can have whatever you want.
I'm going to stick with my RS6. RS6 and Aventador.
Mate, that's a great choice. I was going to say, why buy a Bugatti when you can have a helicopter for the same price?
Yeah, good shout.
Hey, now we're talking.
That would be good. Because my garden's not... I couldn't have one because my garden's not big enough to land it.
What do you reckon is your biggest motoring mistake, Ewan Thomas?
I think any of the cars that have cost me more than they should have. So the XKR, all of them, the Brabus G-Wagon, cars that I didn't keep for very long. I think obviously it's a bit of a long game with motor. Well, I don't know. Some people say shift them quite often, but you know, I definitely took a financial hit on those two in particular. Some cars did well. I mean, the Mini Cooper Works, I sold that a year and a half on for what I bought it for, you know, as I did with the R8s. So I think if you choose wisely, and certainly some, I know some Porsches and certain 911s, you can make good money on those. But I think for me, my only regret would be a financial one. And that's just a feeling of guilt that, you know, I've wasted money and it could have gone on something better. Mm. But then again, you can't buy smiles, can you? You know, when you're driving a car that you enjoy, it's a hobby. There could be lots worse hobbies for me to have.
This is what you need to keep telling your missus, by the way.
Yeah,
you can't buy smiles, darling.
I mean, that is a line is epic, isn't it? I'm going to write that down, actually, because that could apply to many, many things. You can't buy
smiles. I'm going to get that made into some fueling around T-shirts.
Yeah, but yeah, another thing, you're the only person, and I totally, totally agree with what you said. You're the only person that said, do you know what? The only ones I regret are the ones which have cost me brass, but you're not regretting any of the cars as bits of kit. I like that.
Mm.
No, I mean, I think it's a life lesson. I'm sure we all make mistakes in life, but that's what makes us, isn't it? And I know for myself, in my life, both professionally and personally, things where I've messed up, you know, I kind of learn a lot more about myself through those mistakes. And I think perhaps it's the same with cars. You know, I know, for example, never, ever buy a Ford Probe. You know, this, you know... There's certain things, you know, but I had it at the time. So, you know, there's certain cars.
Part of your journey, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's a journey in life, isn't it? And, you know, I don't think if I'd owned perhaps in my early years those fun cars like the 205 and got a real taste for driving, the Lotus Elise, I probably wouldn't have bought a Lambo later on in my life or other cars because, you know, and I blame my dad anyway. From a young age, my dad got me into motorbikes, and my dad is a real petrol head. So he was, you know, back in the day. So he always owned Alfa Romeos, everything going wrong with them, but he loved them. You know, he was really passionate about all the cars he had. So, you know, he used to take me out driving in his cars. And I think it's because of him that I kind of got into, you know, both two wheels and four wheels, you know, the passion that he had, it came down to me.
Mate, what a journey of motors, Dave, eh?
It's a phenomenal journey. Yeah. And it was just when you were saying there about the different things that you've had, Ewan, is that I would hazard a guess that actually every single car that you've owned, even stuff like the Probe and even stuff like the G-Wagon that you regretted, but they've all made you smile in a certain way. There's been something about them. I mean, even the Probe with the pop-up headlights would have made you smile at some point at that age that you were. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, definitely. I mean, I think cars do that, don't they? I love that relationship with cars. I mean, we need them to get from A to B. We need them in our lives. But for me, it's much more than that. It's not a mode of transport. It's my time. You know, quite often I'll find myself just going for a little bit of a drive, you know, if Teddy's being noisy at home or something, and you know, I'll listen to the radio or I won't listen to the radio. Yeah. And I think it's a time where you can lose yourself and just be at one really with that steering wheel. And I just love it. I'll always be into cars. It's my one passion. Yes, I've wasted money on some, but as we've said, it's brought me smiles and it's brought me great memories. And, you know, I wouldn't swap any of my cars.
Mate, hear, absolutely. I just wonder. I wonder if we're going to, if this electric revolution will take away some of that, like me and my car time, because they all kind of going to do the same sort of thing, aren't they? It's going to be no drama.
Homogeneous.
Yeah, that's a great. Yeah, it is. Yeah,
I worry about that as well, and I also worry about whether our kids will inherit that love of the combustion engine, or rather that love of cars and bikes generally, because my fear is that I don't see as many kids coming through that are interested in this stuff as there were when, you know, we were kids.
I agree.
Because I worry that actually what's going to happen is that transport, and we've talked about this before in a very, very depressing way, is the fact that transport is then going to be an app-based thing that actually kids will just effectively order like a automated Uber to take them into town. They're not interested in driving themselves. They just see it as a way of getting from A to B.
Surely then it's our job, isn't it, to educate them. Like, you know, my boy loves it in the car. He goes, oh, daddy, you know, when it's loud and goes quick. Yeah. And maybe it's a way of bonding with our children and taking them to track days while they're still around, you know, or experience days. And it's part of our history, isn't it? And I know a lot of people forget history and we shouldn't. So I agree with you. I think the world is massively changing, but perhaps, just perhaps, there's a few of us who can try and make that difference and keep our kids interested.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And I think the other bit that shouldn't be understated is actually how important the love of cars and being a petrol head, as we all are, is to do with the smells and the noise. And unfortunately, back to your point, Jason, is this is what modern transport is so lacking. Yeah, and I think it's a huge part of it. I think it's a huge part of the sensory, you know, without being too kind of,
You're right. You're right. And this is why, Ewan, this is exactly the reason why you should not ever get rid of your C63.
Never.
No, I won't. That's going nowhere. I may have to get an electric car to go next to it. It will be the Porsche if I'm going. It will be the Porsche, so don't worry about that. But I think, we need to try and keep that noise alive as long as we can. I just hope that fuel will still be available. Like you said, Jason, maybe a new form of fuel, which is better for the environment. Who knows? Mm. But, you know, I think long live the old combustion V8, V10s, whatever, something that sounds good.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, listen, along those sort of lines then, before we let you go, we have this question which we think we should give to you. Music and cars, you and Thomas, go well together, we think, but we need your fantasy drive, okay? Where are you? Where are you going? What are you listening to? And most importantly, what are you driving?
Crikey, that's a great one. See, I listen to all sorts of music. I don't really have a genre which I say when I drive, I put that on, because I'm quite boring. I'll just bang on Radio 2 or whatever I'm listening to. And whatever comes on, it's like a roulette. Yeah. I don't know what music's coming next. I don't bother with, well, my C63 doesn't have Spotify or any, you know, it's old school. So I just listen to the, it's not even DAB, I don't think. I just listen to the radio. Where would I be going and what would I be driving? I'm going to stick with my C63.
Good.
Good lad.
And I'm going to pick my boy up from nursery because I've missed him. But I won't go on the rubbish road where I live with 150 traffic lights. I don't know where I'd be, but I'll be going somewhere to pick up my boy and it'll be a long winding road. And on the way back, he'd be going, faster, daddy, faster.
Mate, it doesn't get any better than that.
Perfect. It's a perfect answer. You know, who needs US Highway 1 or whatever, the Pacific Coast? You're going to nursery to pick up your teddy and he's going, faster, daddy, faster.
That's the one.
Love it. On that note, Jason, I think you need to take us out.
Well, do you know what? That is a perfect point to take us out because it just doesn't get any better than that. So that's it for this week's Fueling Around, powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance. Dave, as always, thank you. But a huge thanks to our special guest this week, the one and only Mr. Car Eclectic Collection, Mr. Ewan Thomas. Thanks, buddy.
Thank you so much. I loved it. Thank you.
Fantastic stuff. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us on Twitter at Jason Plato or at David Vitti. And if you like what you've heard, feel free to give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button and share the podcast on all your socials.
Thanks for listening. And, well, we'll see you next time, eh, Dave?
Roger that.